Hey guys, welcome back to Classic Camera Revival. This is our February episode, and the topic for this episode is folding cameras. That's right, these nice little beauties that have wonderful bellows on them and fold up, well, for the most part, compactly. Not sure about that baby speed graphic sitting over there, Donna. Couldn't fit that one in your pocket. We actually got this as a suggestion from one of our listeners, so let's keep going.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
Okay, and we have a special guest host this episode. Mr. James Lee will be joining us. I know James from the Milton Camera Club and have helped him get back into film. I'm a terrible person for doing that. But anyways, so let's get going. And I'm going to start it off today. And this is actually a relatively new camera for me. It's called the EGFA Ventura Deluxe. And what drew me to it was the fact that it was made in the U.S. zone of Germany. So me being a film nut and a history nerd, especially in and around military history ending at the Cold War, this is essentially a Cold War camera because it was made in during the occupation of Germany in the 1950s. Now, what's really interesting about this is when I went to go look for information about it, I couldn't find anything. And then I realized, after digging through several pages of Google, that it has multiple names. So you might know it as the Isolette 2 or the Ventura 66. It's all essentially the same camera. They just had different lenses. Mine has the Apotar 85mm f4.5. So it's not a fast lens. These cameras are from the 1950s, and so they're incredibly old. I wouldn't recommend purchasing something of this age. Essentially, age has turned this into a toy camera, okay? The grease has basically seized the focusing ring. I thought I could focus it, but it turned out that all I'm doing is turning the ring, not the actual focusing mechanism. But that's fine. Mine is stuck close enough to infinity that I just have to stop it down. So it is really no big deal. And just adds to the toy camera look and feel for it. It's just, I now have exposure settings, which is something I've never had on something like a Debonair or a Holga. It's fun. I like it. I like the 6x6 format. The one thing I wish it didn't have was the lock on it. So when I press the shutter, I can't recock the shutter and press the shutter release again. It will lock. I need to advance it to the next frame. So it has an interlock mechanism on it. I was lucky in the fact that the one that I got, the bellows are intact. There's no light leaks in them.
Lucky you. My Isolette is not functional because it has no bellows.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're looking for something that's a little more compact than a Holga and like that toy camera look and can find one in decent enough shape, it's definitely worth your while. Toy cameras aren't something that I play with a lot in my photography. When I catch the urge, I'll take out my Debonair. But having this in hand, it will make shooting for World Toy Camera Day much easier because this is a camera I'll take out. And that's something that a lot of people don't realize is that some of these cameras can become toy cameras. And I would actually, even though this wasn't originally classified as a toy camera, it definitely is now. So we're going to turn it over to Mike next to talk about his folding.
Yes, my folding camera is actually my late grandfather's. It was a Kodak Vigilant Junior 620. And yeah, I have used this, and as Alex was mentioning about the whole toy camera idea, this one definitely has the toy camera feel to it. 620 film, as everybody should know, it's actually just 120 film on a tighter spool. So I've cross-rolled it, I have put film through mine, and thankfully my bellows is light tight, so that's always a good thing. And I find the results are Well, they're basically exactly what you'd expect out of a meniscus lens. They are relatively sharp in the center, and they kind of go funny off to the edges. Now, I'm not quite sure. Maybe it's just me. I just find that it's a little... the images just don't seem sharp. Maybe it's camera shake. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's I have too high expectations. I'm not sure. But I always found that the images were... They did not have the toy camera feel to it. They kind of just had a sort of not really in focus kind of look to it. And I mean, I'm usually not too picky, but for some weird reason with this one, I expect more. I've shot with, let me rephrase that. I've shot with the lenses of, say, like an autographic Brownie. I've pulled it off the camera, put it on my 4x5, and shot with it. And the results are absolutely breathtakingly stunning. I mean, these are looks that you cannot get with filters. It doesn't matter. You can shoot with a digital camera all you want. Add as many filters as possible. You're not going to get these kind of look. But I just found that for some weird reason on this camera, it just wasn't giving me what I was really expecting out of it. And I shot with a Tourist, and the Tourist was fantastic. It was just, unfortunately, there's too many light leaks in my Tourist to really use it anymore. I shot with a Jiffy 616. Which I threw 120 film through to try it out. And the results, again, they were nice, sharp images. And then I went out with the Vigilant. And again, maybe it's just me, but I was kind of saddened by the image results. I'll have to take it out again and try it another time and see. One other minor thing with the Isolette. There's something really interesting that I had read. If you have a bad bellows, if you can get your hands on a Kodak 66, the bellows are the same. So, and they're actually a better bellows on the Kodak model versus the Agfa model. So you can usually bag a Kodak 66 fairly inexpensive, pop the bellows off, throw it on your Agfa, provided that you can get the lens working, and yeah, you're golden. Fantastic.
Nice. So, James, what folder do we have from you today?
Well, before I get started, Alex, I do want to say thank you very much for increasing my symptoms of gas over the last 3 or 4 years. I shot film way back in the 80s when I was 16 years old and met Alex a few years ago, and he's got me back into shooting film, and I have a rather huge collection of film cameras now and a very, very small bank account, so thank you. What I have today in front of me here is a Zeiss Icon Super Iconta 3C, circa 1938 or 39, somewhere in there. You know, those that are into the, you know, history of these cameras, this one, the Super Iconta C, you know, basically parallels the history of the A through D cameras. The Super, obviously, for this one, for those who may not know, has the wedge rangefinder on top of it. You know, starting in around 1934, when the Super Iconta A came out, and the larger brother, this one, the D, which I don't recommend anyone buy a D. It takes a 616 film. But this one kind of came out somewhere in the middle. You know, one of the things I like the most about this camera, frankly, is not much other than the negative size. You know, it's 6x9. It's not, these things are not the easiest things to use. You have to be in a bit of a special mood to shoot them. They can be a little bit of a handful sometimes, and you certainly need to take your time shooting them, especially, you know, you're getting into... 50, 60 year old cameras with wedge rangefinders in them. The contrast on the rangefinder, as far as the focusing overlay goes, they're not that contrasty anymore. So you need the right light situations. Definitely. For them to get a sharp image. You know what? Other than that, it's a great camera. It's a wonderful portable way to get the largest negative, frankly, that you can on roll film. And you know what? If you have rather large pockets, a parka or something up here in Canada like that, this will certainly fit in your pocket or that corner of your camera bag. Yeah. You know, generally, these cameras, they're found, they're the more sought after ones are the four element Tessars, so with the 105 millimeter faster ones, 3.5 to 3.8. Some of them came in 4.5 as well. The one I have, it's a bit of an oddball, in, not just in terms of the optics. It has a Novar 3.5 105 on it, which, you know, frankly, is a very good lens. I find it has to be stopped down a little bit to get the best levels of contrast and sharpness. And, you know, given the age, I think the shutters might be a little bit off on this one as well, too. You know, this one here, why I say it's an oddball, most of these cameras came with a backing plate to switch over to 6.45 as well, and they're generally noted. You can on those cameras on the back cover, you can see there's most of them come with two film counter windows. This one, for some reason, only has one, so I don't think it ever came with the plate. This one was built only to shoot 6x9, which is a bit of an odd oddity with this with this camera. And it's funny that. You know, from my research, I've found that, you know, that the Novar lens is really quite common, but I can't seem to find a body out there, whether or not it's Evil Bay or Burlington Camera or wherever else, you know, that actually has a Novar lens, a fast one that's 3.5. So it's a very bit of an oddball find. You know, strange, but, you know, I'm not sure why that is. But as far as these cameras go, you know, there's basically two main categories. There's the pre-war and the post-war versions of them. This is a pre-war version. This one, again, is an oddball, too, because a lot of the pre-war versions didn't have the double exposure safety winder on it. And this one does. And that was generally something that they say came out post-war. And also the post-war ones had coated lenses, and this one is uncoated. So this might have fallen somewhere in between the annals of history. I'm not exactly sure, but it's a good camera. The bellows are light tight. You know what? If you want something big and you don't want to get into shooting large format, and you want something, you know, pretty close, and, you know, something that's very field camera-like, this is certainly something to explore. You know, in terms of picking one of these up, now they range. I mean, you can go with a basic folder in the 6x9 range. I also brought a Netar here, which is another Zeiss camera, which is basically the basic version of that of this camera. And I believe that one is a post-war one. It has a Netar 6.3 on it, I think. You know, beautiful shape, and you can pick something like that up for under $100. Yeah. The Super Icon to 3 ranges anywhere from maybe 200 US, and you can, it goes upwards from there. But personally, I wouldn't spend more than $300 on one of these things, and I think that's pushing it for the image quality. And again, you know, it's more of a nostalgic thing, but, you know what, they're great cameras. I highly recommend picking one up.
Yeah, so this Netar that you have over here, this is the 6x9 version, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, okay, since I saw the 105, because I have on basically permanent loan to my cousin who doesn't really have a medium format camera. He's got...
Well, now he does.
Now he does, basically. I gave him a 5.16-17, which is a 6x6 model. Now, the really interesting part is, in some ways, I wish I hadn't given it to him on permanent loan, is the fact that I was literally owner number two. I bought it for $40 off of the original owner, and he gave me a whole bunch of little history of it when he got it as a boy, just after he, well, back in the 50s, he had gotten it, and he shot quite a bit with it. Now, of course, at the same time, when I bought it from him, he also tried to sell me a couple of double 8mm and super 16mm cameras, which, yeah, I don't really
I believe you tried to pawn those off on me the other day.
Oh, most likely.
Which I did give thought to, I must admit. Not very much thought.
Oh, I'm moving right along. We have John Meadows with a very interesting folding camera, in the sense that it doesn't take roll film.
Yeah, what I have here today is an example of a Voigtlander Avis folder. This is their line of folders that dates from sort of the mid-1920s and was considered sort of their medium range or like mid-range. They had a more luxurious line, and the name escapes me. It starts with a B. That's as much as I remember. And this one is a... a 9x12, so it's designed to take 9x12 plates.
So would it take dry plate, or could it shoot like a wet plate collodion process?
It was more like dry plates.
Okay.
And you can load sheet film. Like finding 9x12 sheet film, you either cut it yourself, or there are, you know, you can get it, although it's
yeah,
not cheap these days.
You could order some of the X-ray film off the FPP.
Yeah, and then cut that.
Yeah.
The film holder is rather interesting because there's sort of two pieces. If you're going to shoot the flexible, the thinner film, you have to sort of load it in a sheath and then put the sheath inside the holder.
Oh.
So it is a bit, it's a bit fumbly. I've done it. This camera doesn't get a lot of use. One thing I will say is that there are also 6x9 examples of this model. And what is good about the 6x9 is that you can get 120 roll film holders for 6x9. I actually have one of the holder, those roll film adapters.
Oh, wow.
I just need to buy a good 6x9. And they're affordable. They're about maybe $100-$120
okay,
for the adapter. You can get 120 roll film adapters for the 9x12. But they're German, and they tend to be $200-$300. Like, they're more expensive than the camera. It is from a aesthetic point of view, it is a very attractive camera. It has like the Scopar lens, and Voigtlander's always been known for high quality
definitely
optics. Like, the company's been around from before the dawn of photography. So in a lot of respects, not the most practical camera, but sometimes you just sort of have to put practicality aside and just mm-hmm. appreciate something for the aesthetic value.
Yeah. I am actually looking at that lens thinking like, if I found a camera like that in terrible condition, I'd pull that lens off and mount it on a 4x5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, one thing I will say about this model that I didn't mention, it's quite good because you can use this camera as a view camera, a field camera. It just you pull the film holder out, and it's got a ground glass back.
Beautiful.
So or you can use the like the built-in viewfinders. They're the typical little, you know, flippy ones of the period. So like on a Kodak, you know, autographic. So
yep.
Not horribly good for fine focusing, but if you use the ground glass, not a problem.
Beautiful.
Okay, so the Voigtlander that started with the B is the Bergheil.
That's right. Yeah, that was their high end.
Very nice. And speaking of 4x5, Donna has an incredibly familiar camera, although a bit smaller than my Crown Graphics. So Donna, what folder do you have with you today?
I have the Baby Speed Graphic.
Oh.
Now this camera, it's absolutely beautiful.
It's cute.
Actually one of the things that made me really like it. Unfortunately, I really don't use it much, mainly because I find it very heavy for me to be carrying it around. Mm. It's got some pretty good weight to it. And also, through the viewfinder, even though it has optics, I still can't seem to focus it properly. It gives me a hard time I can't get it to focus. But I have taken some pretty good pictures on it. The pictures are phenomenal. Basically, I just use it really to look good in my home, because it is a beautiful camera, I'm being honest. If anyone's looking for a nice camera to start with, I would recommend this Baby Speed Graphic.
Now, I noticed you have a roll film adapter on the back. Is it possible to shoot sheet film on that?
I don't...
Yeah, yes, it is.
Can you? Okay.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
Since it used to belong
to
me.
Yes, it was John.
The first move I ever made was to sell that camera. I want it back, but anyway. Yeah, you can get the little film holders for it.
2x3, right?
2x3.
Okay.
What is on the camera right now, though, is that you can use a film back from an RB67.
Wow.
And, of course, RB67 film backs are ubiquitous and easy to find.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So much easier to use. Like to my mind, it makes more sense to use as a roll film camera than 2x3 sheet film. That's a bit fiddly.
Yeah, having shot the Mamiya Universal, as well, which I actually ended up comparing to. They took all the stuff in relation to a large format camera and stuck it into an even bigger roll film camera, which was terrible. They had a wonderful opportunity there to build a beautiful replacement press camera.
Yep.
But this, these tiny baby speed graphics, that is a nice looking camera.
It is. That's why I haven't parted with it, actually. I absolutely love it. It's.
And I do actually have one more of them. It's an older one. It's in my garage somewhere because I have a project I'm planning to try is that the 2x3 film holders are actually almost the perfect size to put Instax Mini
film holders. That's interesting.
So I'm going to try it using Instax Mini. The trick is the processing of the film.
Yeah,
you either have
definitely.
To put it back in the Instax camera in the dark.
Yeah.
Or you get really good at the rolling pin and learn how to apply consistent pressure.
Yeah.
That's one of my winter projects.
Nice.
Well, one thing, just to quickly jump in on this baby speed, I've used it and it's abused me a few times. Needless to say, there's no dark slide interlock. So when you're shooting a roll of Riala and you go through and you're like, wow, these shots are going to be great. And then you kind of glance down at the camera and realize you never pulled the dark slide. Yeah, that kind of sucked. But the other thing I like about it is you can use barrel lenses. So
that's right. It would have a focal plane shutter on it because it's a speed graphic, not a crown graphic.
Absolutely. And we also have the ground glass. So I can put the ground glass on it, do my focusing, take the ground glass off, put on my roll film, take the shot, and
right.
Granted, yes, it's kind of crazy considering it's a roll film camera and I'm going to be really, really going above and beyond what I would even do with a 4x5. But I mean, the fact that I can shoot, say, 8 shots in a row at 6x9 or 12 at 6x6, it makes a big difference when you're shooting it as opposed to sitting there in the dark afterwards and trying to deal with film holders and stuff. So it does in the interim, like before and after you shoot it, it saves a lot of time. But at the shooting process, it does take a little bit longer doing it that way.
Definitely. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to James for joining us. He will definitely be coming on to a few more episodes this season. And, well, that's it for me. My name's Alex Oak saying you can't see my poker face.
This is John Meadows saying you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
This is Mike Bataxi signing off. And just remember, I won't poke her because I don't know her.
Oh, boy.
This is Donna Bataxi, and keep your film rolling.
This is James Lee. Wine me, dine me, and 6x9 me.
Well, I think we're changing our rating on iTunes.